This is Hope Swan interviewing D.O. Johnson at D.O.'s home in Kremling on December 10th, 1966. Now, D.O., we I think maybe where we ought to start is somewhere before you went into the Forest Service and get some of your background and find out what sort of motivate you or go into the service. Were you raised in this area or in Colorado?
No, I was first up to 11 years old. I was raised in the short grass country in the western plains of Kansas. And we moved to Denver. We spent about a year in Denver. And then my father bought a little place north of Denver and had a little store. And then we sold that and went up in the Greeley District and went farming. And in fact, it was the potato blight and frost and one thing another. He went broke farming there. So we went into the North Park country in 1914. I was about, I guess about 19 years old when we went in there. And he homesteaded there, and we afterwards bought a sawmill and went to the sawmill business, and the market wasn't very good there, and so I, in the summer of, let's see, summer 1925, I worked for Charlie Cutsler, Ranger Cutsler, on the Grizzly Creek District.
Well, that's interesting, because when I get back, I'm supposed to interview Charlie and get his background.
And during that time, we built about 51 miles of trail with five of us. And I noticed some of the trail that Ed Gamber and I located. We were the axemen, done the chopping out and clearing of the trail, and the other crew followed, making the tread. And I noticed the present road that they're building towards the Rabbit Ear almost followed it to right in the old trail, just missed here and there. Followed the grades.
There wasn't any road over the Rabbit Ear then.
And then in that fall, I went over to Steamboat Springs and took the ranger's examination. That is the old ranger's examination. And that's probably partly influenced on that. I was going with a Boston school teacher that fall, and she mentioned something about that and said, "I bet I couldn't pass it." So it was kind of a challenge, so I went over and took it. And I broke my leg skiing, and was in the hospital when the notice came for me to report to the Fraser District, Ranger District, as assistant to Johnny Johnson. And I did manage to get out of the hospital and had a brace on my leg. And at that time, I was ordered to have a horse and a pack outfit, pack horse. So that is the way I arrived at the...
That was in 1926.
In June, about the 18th, I think, of 1926. And there. And that summer, I served as an assistant to Johnny until the latter part of September, when we went to the training school conducted by Peter Keplinger at Woodland Park. And that, after it was finished, Mr. Keplinger told me that was going to give me a district right away. During the summer, going back, things that had maybe highlights of it. Johnny was gone most of the time on, land exchange work and other things, and most of the fires that I handled myself there. I remember the Corona Pass fire, or sheds burned up there that summer, and then they were building the railroad grade from the west portal of the tunnel down there to connect up with the old railroad grade over Corona Pass.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed Honan, father, had the contract for building that, and Ed Honan was doing the building. He had three old Ford dump trucks and a steam shovel, and that's what they built.
That
grade. Well,
all the grade.
Along
the Moffat Tunnel was in, was it?
Just about finished, not quite. Mm-hmm. No, I guess it was in. They were doing some more work on. And it got dry weather, and Wendy's commenced fire danger getting high. And I told Honan to, he'd better watch that shovel and keep a man on there at noon. And he apparently ignored me, thought I didn't know what I was talking about. And one noon, it took off out of the right-of-way. It spot fired there, and there's pretty good wind blowing, and it started up the hill. In fact, it was just about the same conditions as the Jim Creek fire a year before that burnt most of Jim Creek. And I ran on down to Billy Woods's logging sawmill camp, and his crew was eating dinner, and they got them out there, and we got out there, and we started doing probably one thing that was cautioned never to do, and that is throw dirt on the fire. It ground in reproduction, and that is the only way we could hold it down enough to chop enough of a line to stop it. And we stopped it in about a half acre area. And that afternoon, Jack Clehow, the supervisor, come up there, and he looked it over, and well, he didn't say much. The only thing he started criticizing was chopped too much reproduction out and stopping it. And I told Jack, I said, reproduction, hell, we stopping that fire. And I've been more or less that way all through my Forest Service career, as far as telling what I thought.
Put the fire out and save the timber all at the same time.
Yeah. Well, summer I scaled logs, practically outside of that all summer, and they were black, and you'd come in every evening, it's just about as black as a nigger. I'm scaling them. And afterwards, my scale books were taken to, when they made up the, sample scaling. That was the basis of that. And then that fall, we had to cruise the Kaiser Creek timber area in there, in the head of the muddy, a little muddy. And so Bill Robb and I, with two pack horses and our saddle horses, along about 3rd or 4th of November, started out to build the timber sail cabin, the cruiser's cabin. And we didn't have only just saws and axe, and Carl Yana was supposed to bring the grub up to the Horseshoe Ranger Station, and we'd pack up. We had enough along for a few days, and we stopped the old Dunham sawmill and picked up some lumber to build the doors on the cabin. And the Bill wanted to put it on his horse, and put it on his pack horse, and of course the horse is not used to it, and he scattered everything Bill had on the pack. So then we had to repack it and put it on mine.
Well, at that time, D.L., was the old county road that went through Ute Park and over Ute Pass and on, was that in operation?
Oh, no.
That was still before that?
Oh, yeah. No, it was all trail in there.
It's pretty well overgrown and dim now, but the Jeeps are getting in, and so I suppose it'll be a road again someday.
we built that cabin That's the only lumber we had in the, for the cabin. We used poles for the roof. And I cut the timber and Bill skidded it in, and I laid up the logs. Bill didn't know anything about that. When we got to the ridge poles, why, Bill brought in some, about 4 or 5 inches or 6 inches, and I told him those wouldn't do, that roof would come in. Got a little bit mad about it, and, but he finally went on out and we got some larger logs and put them up there, and we cut poles and throwed the duff and needles on top and then dirt on top of that. And we had some this cream cloth that's kind of like isinglass, mm-hmm. and we put that in for windows and built in the bunks, and we completed that cabin in about 10 days. Yana come up and helped us 2-3 days, but he wasn't much help in that. And then that winter, on the during the cruise, there was Johnny Johnson, myself, Carl Yana was supposed to be in charge, but he wasn't there very much, didn't know too much about it. And Bill Robb, there's a little friction between the two of them on that. And let's see, Urban Post, and Frank Smith, and Al Straub.
The old man or the boy of Frank Smith?
The old man.
The old man, yeah. I know both.
Yeah, that is the old man.
Young Frank worked for me. Frank was on the uncompartery when I first ran into it.
We were in there about 3 months, and along about 2nd month, so when Yana went out to get the mail or something, we packed it in on everything on, in on our backs afterwards. And Urban Post sent down an order for him to bring back some firecrackers. So he thought we'd be there till the 4th of July. And in the evening, we had a poker game that ran as soon as we got through with our compilations and brought up our tally sheets and one thing another and maps. And we didn't have any poker chips. We had beans for pennies and 44 shells of Bill Robb's as a nickel piece. That ran all the time. And I think when the 3 months is up, Johnny Johnson had won about $18, and two or three others had had 4 or 5. Well, we, in my state, in as soon as we got it built, I went down and took over the Horseshoe Ranger district, and then along about the latter part of December, they sent up the grub and canned goods and stuff that was going to pack in there. So I packed that in and the stove, and we buried the canned goods to keep them from freezing. The meat we hung up a tree, or between the trees and the pole, and covered the canvas to keep the camp robbers out of it. And the same way with the bread, because when we next month when we come in, there's too much snow to get all the way up with a pack horse. Even we had to pack part of it in, then on our back, their beds and stuff.
Did any hunters get into Horseshoe then? Outside hunters, I mean, or just locals?
No, there wasn't a season then.
Well, this year I'll swear the first day of the season there's one behind every lodgepole.
No,
never saw any hunters. They crawl over that rim from the road, and then they come in by the way of the station, and some of them come up Pease Gulch and stuff. I never saw as many hunters there.
Well, that's let's see. I had the William, or the well, that is the Williams Fork district. This is at the old Horseshoe Ranger Station was the Williams Fork district's headquarters. And then I had that for 3 years. And then in 29, they combined 3 ranger districts and gave to me. I had the Williams Fork, the Blue River, and the Sheephorn off of the Blue River off the old Leadville, and the Sheephorn off of the White River.
How'd the Horseshoe Station get its name, do you know?
I don't know. I have no idea how it did.
I've often wondered about it.
No, I never knew. And that wasn't enough. They also gave me the sheep range clear to top of Berthoud Pass. I think I had 4 head of horses. I rode them all till it was a leg weary that they were just about done for before.
Well, that was quite a district.
And I had no Model T Ford, but I couldn't do the roads. Most of them was too bad to cover very much of the country, only just main roads.
Well, Leo, just before we shut this machine down for a 5-minute breather, you were telling me about snowshoeing from Slate Creek over to Horseshoe on the Williams Fork. And that sounded to me like a kind of a hazardous sort of a trip that safety people wouldn't permit nowadays. Is that right?
Oh, yes. It's it was a 27-mile round trip on snowshoes, and there was no place to stop or stay. I could have gone down to the old Horseshoe Ranger Station, but there was no food or anything, just bed there in the office. And so I would make that trip, get up early in the morning. It's maybe 8-9 o'clock before I got in, but and we also was using those tubes at that time. It was supposed to be 2 men. Later on, all us 2 men would make those trips.
That is snow sampling and weighing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I done it all alone on two courses.
One day over and one day back.
No, all in one day.
Well, I mean, you went back again.
Yeah. All in one day.
Oh, that was quite a trip.
No, that was all in one day.
And not a house along the way, or ranch, or anything else?
No. No, there's none along, and it's practically all of it had to be broke. A new trail.
Uh-huh.
At least 25 miles of it was, I had to break new trail all the way. Also, when I took over the 3 ranger districts, the headquarters was at Slate Creek, so I moved to Slate Creek in the spring, and the seasons on most of the ranges on the Blue River on the east side were all May 1st, and the same way down on the Sheephorn, and they were way overstocked, estimated the capacity was about 3 times what they'd actually carry. And I know I got in an argument with Supervisor Lehow over the way they figured it on these steep mountain bunch grass hillsides. It's too steep, no water or anything else. And I classed them as waste range and or should be left for the elk or deer. But I didn't win at that time. I guess I have since then. It would certainly not be classed as grazing land anymore.
Oh, those old timers that were in there early, they saw more grass than we could see, and they didn't allow for the cows climbing steep hillsides.
No. And all the districts that I've had, of course, I only had that territory 1 year there. And I tried to leave, and in fact, I'm sure I did, and most of them leave in better shape than I found them. I was transferred back in the spring of 1930 to the Fraser Ranger District as district ranger there, and that next summer, we started to develop some of the campgrounds and recreation. In fact, I remember, I suppose, maybe we better shut off, see what the date was, and Clark come on there. Oh, you mean, I could before there. In 19, 31 and 32, we started building campgrounds, put in campground improvements, some of the first ones. And in fact, I got 2 carloads of toilets, and about half of that work I had to do myself.
That was really the beginning of recreation.
Yeah, the beginning of recreation.
Uh-huh.
And also, we built trails up Buchanan Pass and Arapaho Creek, and later on, why the water bars and switchbacks was made standard or taken from the work I'd done there.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of threw the old trail handbook away myself. Mm-hmm. I did. And they were patterned off of those that we'd constructed. In fact, those trails, I understand, are still in very good shape and have required very little maintenance work over the period of years.
They were
down to 7% in lower grade, and the switchbacks were laid out and level and fixed so they were properly.
Nothing heated. Over 10% except little short stretches, maybe.
Yeah, just very short.
Yeah.
And that's had heavier traffic than any other trails on the Arapaho National Forest.
Did they work on, did you work on the Williams Fork, that government trail from Horseshoe that goes up now?
Yes.
Across, that was one of them.
Yeah.
I travel that every fall when I go deer hunting.
There was the matter of fact, when I first came on the took over the Horseshoe Ranger District, and we finished building the cruiser's cabin while we was coming on down Kaiser Creek, and it was after dark, and Bill Robb and I had an awful time. We had to cut out logs in order to get through. Myself on that. And then on June the 2nd, 1933, A train load of CC destined for the Williams Fork, and the train had pulled into Williams into partial, and the part of the lieutenant and some others had started on up towards the campsite, and they decided to change the orders and send them back to Tabernache. And on the train there was a 185 green CC enrollees, no foreman.
Where did they come from?
Mostly from Oklahoma, or some of them from, all over, in fact, but most of them were from Oklahoma and Texas, down in that country. And they had one corporal and one sergeant and a lieutenant. The lieutenant was very about useless as far as knowing anything about handling, getting anything done. And they had a doctor along with them. Also had their food and tents and bedding and everything. There was 7 coach loads of bedding. So we got them turned around and got them back to Tabernache about 11 a.m. And we had 3 old broken down rented Hertz trucks to unload the train and the 7 baggage coaches.
And three coaches full of bedding.
Yeah, about 3 coaches full of bedding, yeah. We had to issue the bedding to it. Well, first, we couldn't get to the camp where we was going. There was too much snow, so we strung them out along the creek on the road going up there. And we had to string them out pretty much because there wasn't enough room. And we set up 5 of those big hospital tents. There were 3 of us that knew how to start doing the job, and of course we used the other kids there. And I had 2 men working for me, Thorwell Olson and his son, and they cut tent stakes and poles and stuff like that, so we knew had someone to do that. We got had a load of hay hauled in there, or baled hay, to sprinkle out for and make bedding for them. And we issued the bedding and fed them, and we were finished up about midnight. Hmm. Had the boys bedded down. And the later on, the next year, of course, we had the camps built, and we also had the foreman. Regional Forester Dave Nardwall was one of the CC foremen in this camp, and Johnny Johnson came back to be the superintendent in the camp during the summer. And Dave and I had the side camps, and which later on they wouldn't allow. They had to all be in there, and we used them up on the trail up on Arapahoe Creek and places like that.
Now they did what, their work?
Their work consisted mostly of thinning. We cleaned up along the logs along Berthoud Pass Road to the top, and they did some campground work, and the camp that Dave Nardwall had, we used them on the trail during that summer.
Did they work on that big thinning between Williams Fork and Pease Creek, just above the Horseshoe Station?
No. No, the only thinning was done was along Meadow Creek.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that mm-hmm. referred to as a CCC thinning, and I thought maybe the same bunch.
No, they didn't do that. And also helped build the road on up, rebuild the old road up to the old Western Box sawmill up on Meadow Creek.
Do you have any equipment, or is that all pick and shovel work?
Pick and shovel work.
Mm-hmm.
No, it is all pick and shovel work.
Well, I was lucky. I had a 25 Alice Chalmers bulldozer.
Oh. No.
A pretty light machine, but it was all right. Well, they worked on campgrounds too, didn't they?
Yes, some, but not too much. We had them on several fires. There's one fire there during that summer. A train coming up from Fraser set three different fires, and they coming up, and one of them ran out there just by where present Hideaway Park is, and I had a crew of them in there myself in there, and the fire crowned, and that fire come over us at least 100 feet. I saw it was the minute they did that and exploded that way. We were about 150 yards from the railroad right away, and I told them to drop their tools and get the hell out of there and follow me, and we hit for the railroad track and let her go. The road down there stopped the fire. We afterwards got out on the side of it and pinched it in, the other fires ran out into the meadow and more or less stopped themselves before we get them. They weren't so dangerous, so the crews that they sent up there was the ones that was on that upper fire mostly. Then afterwards, of course, we used them on. And they also helped clean up some of the old flumes that used to go down to the Western Vox Mill. I might state, thinking back there, when the first summer in 1926, when I was up there, I scaled the last logs that came down the St. Louis Creek flume to the old Stephen Barr sawmill. And after that, the old flume was never used again.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the boys? Were they good workers?
Yes. The boys we had, where they had good leadership, were good men.
Mm-hmm.
We had very few that was, and the trouble when they first started there, I guess the same as everywhere, they didn't have enough proteins. It was too much. Well, I think they were trying to feed them on 19 or 23 cents, I forget the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it just couldn't be done in a mountain country.
No, that's right. It takes food to turn out work.
The food, there was too much starches in that.
Well, you You figured then at the end of the season that the CCC work was pretty successful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my impression.
Yeah.
Our boys...
Where it was planned and where they we could use them, where there's some effective... Of course, some of it was not too effective work, no.
Well, they let me put outside camps. In fact, we had some 75 miles from the main camp, where that is by road, to get to it. And I always felt that those were very successful, to get the boys out there in a group of 25 or 30, maybe, and they can do a lot of work.
No. Well, mine had to be packed in.
Oh.
They were, and that was one objection there that they had to it, because they couldn't get to them with the trucks.
Well, we had road access, but it was sometimes a long, long ways around. But they put in roads to overcome that very problem.
During that time, I was scaling about 3.5 million feet and marking of timber on that district without any help. And it was... I guess I can't think.
Now, the all preceding the CCC work, there were some other programs, work programs, one of which was NIRA, NIRA, we all refer to it, the NIRA work program. You have some, I believe you were telling me some stories about that. Now, you're on.
So, well, we had some trail work that needed to be done, and under the NIRA program, we had to pay union wages to the men, and it had to be local men that were in need of work. So we had to pick some very good men, and among them was an ex-Woods boss, old Gus Severine, was a famous character around there, and I had a man named Jim Short who as cook in the camp, and who afterwards opened up and established the La Casa Cafe, which was famous for a number of years here. And this camp was back up the trail. Everything had to be packed in. And we charged them at that time, the men, I think $1.25 a day for food. But they could have anything that they wanted. In fact, Jim Short fed them T-bone steaks until they hollered and wanted some boiled meat. Every week we would send up a hind quarter and a loin, beef loin, and a couple pork loins, fresh, sometimes fresh pork, all the fruits in season, and even cantaloupes and stuff like that was packed into this camp. And at the mealtime or at night and for dessert, why, the crew had a choice of two or three different kinds of pie, or and sometimes other desserts. Jim was a very good cook. He had three Kimmel camp stoves that he was cooking on in the cook tent. And we had tables made. We made our tables by tacking a lath to pieces of canvas, and it could be rolled out, and an oilcloth then put on top of them, and bench seats, and which are very comfortable.
Those were standard in the fire camps in the old days. You
it was,
put up two poles and then roll this.
Yeah, run it on. And we got an exceedingly large amount of work done during that time. One of these men that afterwards that worked on that trail had a half section of land where the Tabernash campground now is, and he wished to get some money out of it, so I offered him, I thought we could get at least $1.25 an acre through exchange for it for timber on a going sale. So that was agreeable with him, and so I surveyed it out all alone. I had to pace it outside of making my tie from about a mile away from a section, known section corner, which I used steel pins and keep pulling my tape up and walking back in order to be sure that I had the right place to start. And then I paced it off, made the maps, report, and everything. And as far as I know, there was never anything else changed on it. It went through the regional office onto the Washington office and back, and the sale was consummated. And today you have the large Tabernash camp in that, on that area. We had a heavy all the time that from 1930 on, when I come back there as a district ranger, we had a heavy land exchange work, but part of the time we had a special crew on some of that later on, but a lot of it I did with the help of the assistant supervisor or someone else occasionally, but that is the only one that I'd done everything alone. But I made out.
Well, that's doing it the hard way.
Yeah. Let's see, there was C.J., when I first went in there, was Granger and C.J., and a lot of them was always scared of old C.J., and but I always liked him. I really did. I think that he was one of the best regional men that was ever in there.
C.J. Stahl was one person you could always depend on,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah. And afterwards, I took him out after he retired, and I took him out along with Ed Heaton up on the West Fork of the Troublesome there on a fishing trip once or twice, and where there was wonderful grass and everything, wonderful fishing, and I know old C.J. really enjoyed that.
C.J. and I had a game that we played. Sometime during the summer, C.J. had called me up on the office phone, and he'd say, "I see you're going out next week, such and such a place." And I'd say, "Yeah." And he'd say, "How about me going along?" So that was the signal. I'd get right on the telephone and call up the local supervisor or ranger, whoever I could get a hold of him, tell him, "Well, C.J. Stahl and I are coming out, and I'll get C.J. a good top saddle horse." And we both knew this little game, but C.J. always appreciated that. He liked to ride a good horse.
Yeah. No, he was, I always admired him.
Yeah, I did too.
He was very capable. Some of them were scared to death of him.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I had him figured out that he was so darn kind-hearted.
Yeah, he had to have that gruff exterior.
He didn't want you to know about it.
No, he had to have that gruff. He was the most kind-hearted human in the regional forester.
That's right.
He really was. Now that's the same thing that I figured about C.J. That he used that rough exterior. Of course, when it had to be something done, C.J. would do it, and he was fearless about it.
That's right.
When things weren't right, he straightened them out. Now, and I admired the man. I really did. I always liked him.
I know one trip on the old Washakie, I had to ride quite a number of permittees and the local boys, and C.J. was along, and he said, "Well, I can't help you out in this range work," and so he'd get busy and move camp, and then he'd get in and start cooking and doing whatever needed to be done.
Oh, he really enjoyed when things was going right.
Well, I suppose he got pretty well acquainted with Colonel Peck.
Yes, not too much. I knew his boy at first when we first. Stop. I might as well stop.
Okay. Now we're going to talk about the beginning of Winter Park.
Along about 1930 or 31, I'm not this sure, when they started keeping the Berthoud Pass open, by the following summer, with the help of Colonel Peck's son, and there was Frank Ashley, president of the First National Bank now, and I believe Gerald Phillips, I believe that was, Thomas Dine, and myself, and there's a, let's see, I don't believe I had any men or any funds, but at that time, But we all we laid out the first ski trails, the one down Cooper Creek, and the one that went down north from Berthoud Pass to connect up with the old stage road, and also cleared up on the hill west of Berthoud Pass. And this let the skiers come on up in the wintertime when a carload and one man would drive down to the lower switchback on the north side, and the skiers would have a run there of approximately 3 miles. That on the Cooper Creek side on the eastern slope was a shorter run of possibly, a quarter to a half mile. I don't know exactly what the distance was now that we cleared out, and this would give them a faster run. And as far as I know, these were the first really ski runs that were built, or long trails. Steamboat Springs and Hot Sulphur Springs had the ski jumps long before, of course. But
that was in what year?
It was either the winter of, or it was either in 30 or 31, somewhere uh-huh. along in there, if I'm not mistaken.
Uh-huh.
I'd have to check back through the diaries. It was before the CC days and the NARA program and all that.
Ready to go again.
I might make a note. The Arlberg Club was formed by this same group of men. And then later on, we built a ski shelter cabin up on First or Second Creek. I forgot now just which one of the creeks it was. And also built a ski shelter right back of the ranger station. And
which station was that, Idlewild?
Idlewild, back of the Idlewild ranger station. This one down there was built later on, though. The one up in First Creek was built for the CC crews, now I remember, because I packed the boards and the toilets and that stuff in there for them.
Then the next step after that was to get the old rope toes in.
Yeah, well, that I left there before the rope toes.
That was beyond those days.
Yeah, this is beyond the days. I left there before the rope toes started. Let's see.
Well, there was another work program in those days besides the CCC and NARA, and that was the WPA.
Yeah, and the WPA followed the CC camp. So we had a CC camp at the Tabernash there for 2 years. And then following that, along about 35, 34, was during the WPA camp. And the WPA crews, we completely rebuilt the Idlewild Ranger Station dwelling and added on to it. And we dug a basement underneath it. Had it set up on stilts. We dug out in the corners and set the thing up on stilts, and then afterwards mm-hmm. dug out and run the footing and walls for the basement and underneath it, and plastered it. And we started on that project in November. We had to get their sand and gravel out of the creek for all that. We built that fireplace that's there. It was about 40 below zero weather, 20 to 40 when that was being built. Had to protect it in canvas, stuff like that. And we built the barn and the two-car garage completed, and the addition on to the present garage and that. And wife and I and daughter lived in the old office building. It was just a cubby hole. That is all. There was no cooking room or anything else in there, no space at all. Well, we had the ranger station tore up. And by the 1st of April, the ranger station finished, painted, and we moved back in there. And although I was criticized for the job going so slow, it was one of the fastest WPA jobs of building under adverse conditions all the way through in the Forest Service, and it was. It proved out afterwards it was.
Well, they had a lot of cartoons in those days about the WPA leaning on the shovel.
Yeah. No, we had some good men. We had probably all, in fact, during those periods there, I think I worked all the winos that was on, down in Larmer and Lawrence Street. In fact, I couldn't go in Denver and down that way, but whatever, one knew me there for several years. We had, during that winter, we started in with about 70 men. We built a ski shelter shack and done some clearing for a ski run back of the Idlewild Ranger Station there on that. We tore down the old restaurant and observation building up at Corona, picked up some ties. In fact, we used those brick in a number of the ranger stations that we were rebuilding again. And during that time, a couple of the WPA cooks got in a butcher knife fight. We had old George Leatherman, was quite a character, one of my foremen, and he got him straightened out. And I had another foreman that was on the Esquire group count that laid out most of the ski trails or looked them over, the feasibility of where the present winter park runs are now. A fellow named Graham McGown. And let's see.
That there were a couple men killed on that job?
Oh, yeah. There was, I had a colored boy working on the job when we were building the barn and combination two-car garage, and he got a toe froze. And he went on into the WPA office in Denver, and he wanted to get his money right away, and apparently, I don't know, something happened. Anyway, he went berserk, and he shot two of them and killed and wounded the third.
Oh, down in Denver?
Yeah, in Denver. It was on that. And as a whole, they were, some of them, pretty tough characters mm-hmm. we had in there. There was... Later on, after I was transferred to the Sulphur Ranger District again, I had a insect control project up on the headwaters of the East Fork of the Troublesome, and this was all packed in, and we had started in with about 25 men in November. And when we come out of there, we had about 17, and we had 4.5 foot of snow. And they cut 3,500 trees and burned them on top of 4.5 foot of snow, or most of all of it. And it, of course, we didn't have power saws or anything like that.
No, not this.
And that is really pretty tough when you had to pack it in that condition, that number of men, that period.
Well, D.O., we've pretty well covered the Depression years of the 30s. In the 1940s, as I remember, one of the big items was the fight over ranger reductions. Did you get involved in that at all?
Well, I gradually had been making reductions even before the 1940s, and I really didn't have any... fight. That is, we could show them where that's, in some cases, I got rid of approximately 4,500 head of sheep on the, about 1,000 head on the Fraser District, and then later on the Sulphur District that I was later transferred to for about 4 years, along about 36, I believe, or 37, I went to the Sulphur District, as I remember.